I arrived in Juba this Monday in response to growing concern at developments here, including reports of targeted ethnic violence against multiple ethnic groups. And my aim was to better understand the landscape of ethnically fueled violence, including hate speech and incitement to violence, and to provide assistance where requested. I will not go much about the role of my office, which Chantal has just described. Let me simply say that in the course of this week, I have spoken to United Nations colleagues, senior government officials, civil society groups, community leaders. I visited a protection site of civilian in Juba and traveled also to Ye to meet with members of the community there. I have enjoyed good cooperation with all actors with whom I have met, and I would like to express my appreciation to the Transitional Government of National Unity and to UNMISS for facilitating this visit. And that being said, I am dismayed to report that what I have seen, what I have heard, has confirmed my concerns that there is a strong risk of violence escalating along ethnic lines with the potential for genocide. I do not say that lightly. In place of the development of a South Sudanese national identity, I have seen that there is extreme polarization among some tribal groups, which has increased in certain places since the outbreak of violence in July this year. Inflammatory rhetoric, stereotyping, and name-calling have been accompanied by targeted killings and rape of members of particular ethnic groups by violent attacks against individuals or communities on the basis of their perceived political affiliation. The media, including social media, are being used to spread hatred and encourage ethnic polarization. And later, threatening specific groups have surfaced in the last month. I'm particularly concerned by the involvement of the youth in this country in this dangerous spread of hatred and hostility, as they are particularly susceptible to division within society. The perpetrators and victims are not homogeneous, which make an assessment of the risk of atrocity crimes in South Sudan very, very complex. But the patterns are there. Throughout the week, conversation with all actors have confirmed that what began as a political conflict has transformed into what could become an outright ethnic war. With the stalling of the implementation of the peace agreement, the current humanitarian crisis, a stagnating economy, and the proliferation of arms, all of the ingredients are there for a dangerous escalation of violence. In speaking to people here, I heard of tremendous mistrust between the civilian and the military population. Many people refer it to an undisciplined army that was formed out of what had once been two opposing forces and has now splintered into multiple armed groups, gangs, and bandits, which cannot be controlled by the central government. People no longer seem to see the military as their protector, but rather either an entity to be feared or to be joined as one of the few potential employers. One elder I met summed up the current ethnic polarization. He said that he could see in the eyes of some fear and enthusiasm in the eyes of others. Fear on one side, enthusiasm on the other. I was last in South Sudan in 2014, and serious commitments were made at that time to end the violence which have been, unfortunately, unfulfilled. And I'm extremely saddened and disturbed to see South Sudan in its current state, and I fear for its people. Even as the conflict becomes ever more complex, the effects of the December 2013 outbreak of violence linger, and the human rights violations committed at that time have not been accounted for. I was extremely supportive of the establishment of the African Union Commission of Inquiry, which was led by former President Obasanjo, because I did believe that the perpetrators of the serious crime committed during that period should be brought to account, and that impunity should no longer prevail. But what we are seeing today is that violations are ongoing, accountability is not being fulfilled, and on the contrary, there is renewed violence on a daily basis, and any hope of reconciliation seems to be elusive. Justice and accountability were common themes in my discussion during my visit, but there seems to be little hope of either at the moment. And I must emphasize that genocide is a process. It doesn't happen overnight, and because it is a process and one that takes time to prepare, it can be prevented. Action can and must be taken now to address some of the factors that could provide fertile ground for genocide. What surfaced over and over in my discussion this week was the presence of long-standing anger combined with misconception and preconceived notions. These need to be addressed if there is to be a chance of peace. My intention in reporting this assessment is to provide impetus for preventive action. I was encouraged by the receptivity among the actors whom I met to my suggestion that there was an urgent need for reconciliation, as well as a willingness to engage in both community and national level dialogue. I would like to highlight the situation in Yei River State, which I visited briefly on Wednesday. Until recently, Yei has been spared the widespread violence of other areas. And over the last few months, however, reports detail the expulsion of farmers from their agricultural plots into Yei Town. These farmers have lost their homes and belongings, livestock and land. Property has been looted and villages have been burned. Yei has been subject to severe access restrictions, despite a grave humanitarian situation and the alarming targeting of civilians. Residents are confined to a small area within the town or risk attack by armed forces. I heard reports of violence that included targeted killings, assault, maiming, mutilation and rape by armed men, some in uniform and others not. there were cases of the barbarous use of machete, which remind me the Rwanda, the 100 days in Rwanda. Machete to hack families to death. Bodies have been found in the river. There is widespread fear among the population. One person reported desperately to me, "Tonight, I don't know what will happen to me." Another elder expressed terror that his community would be finished, quote unquote. Even on the day I visited, I saw families packing up the few belongings they have left and waiting on the side of the road for transport either to Juba or to neighboring Uganda for refuge. The gravity of the situation in Yei merits immediate intervention, a full-scale fact-finding investigation, and enhanced humanitarian support. And I'm ready to assist the government of South Sudan by providing expertise to help them to conduct that investigation. The population has been forced to finally into town without access to food, and they and the refugee population which Yei hosts are suffering. Yei is but one example among many. The signs are all there for the spread of this ethnic hatred and targeting of civilians that could evolve into genocide if something is not done now to stop it. I urge the people of South Sudan to take action. I urge the people of South Sudan to reconcile among themselves. There is nothing more precious than peace. And in that regard, I also committed to provide support at the local level to enable religious leaders, community leaders, to help in diffusing this tension. But ultimately, the state has the primary responsibility to protect its population. And that population includes also the refugee population. That means that all South Sudanese, irrespective of their ethnic, national, or political affiliation, and other states, regional organizations, and the international community can assist its protection efforts, however. And I plan to do my part by informing the international community of my assessment and calling for action. I will speak with members of the African Union. I will speak with both former president of Botswana, Mogae, and former president of Mali, Alpha Omar Konare. I will speak also to the Security Council as well as IGAD. All we have a responsibility to assist the government of South Sudan to diffuse the current tension to prevent further escalation of this ethnically fueled tension. And as I leave Juba, I will repeat what I said 2 years ago in this very same seat I am today. I said that day, South Sudanese, your leaders, the regional and the international community also, I beseech you to take immediate measures to end the violence and uphold our collective responsibility to protect the population of South Sudan from atrocity crimes. Ethnicity or political affiliation should not be used as a reason to incite violence or to demonize and exclude any community or section of the population. We must all put strive for peace in South Sudan. That was the call I made from the seat to the South Sudanese and to the entire international community. Unfortunately, today, down the road, we are witnessing a new cycle of violence. We need to bring that violence into an end.